The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go
now. There's a lot of firsts for the Bump and Stacy show. Count this one, our first time having Big Ray Roberts on, though certainly not the last. Ray joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Ray, how's it going?
It's going all right, buddy. How are you guys doing? Good to hear Big Mike getting his daily show and getting his opportunity to work with one of my favorite people, Stacy.
Oh, thank you. It's been really, really fun. Look, we haven't had a lot of great Mariners news, but we're happy to be talking some Seahawks with you because there's plenty of optimism here. Ray, I'm going to start with where else the offensive line. Obviously, we were talking earlier about whether there'd be a limit where you'd say no to DK. And the most common response I saw wasn't necessarily about DK. It was like, well, what use is it when you don't have a good offensive line? What do you see as their ceiling this year?
I think they have an opportunity to be really good if the, obviously you're going to have some growing pains with Lucas and Cross. Yeah. But I think that Lewis and Jackson still have a chance to be one of the top guard duos in the league. Last year was a little bit disappointing. I think it was a lot of it had to do with them just not getting a whole lot of reps in the preseason, and the offensive line didn't gel together, so they got off to a slow start. And then you have Phil Haynes that played really good down the stretch. So I think if the interior of the offensive line, including Blythe, the new center, can kind of stabilize themselves early, I think they have a chance to move up whatever those rankings are with the Pro Football Focus with them near the bottom.
First, Big Ray, let me say what's up, man. Miss you, love you. We need a hook up here pretty soon, big homie.
Yes, sir. I'm proud of you, man.
Hey, appreciate you, dog. So my question to you is, man, you hear a lot of talks about these young tackles, right? You got Charles Cross, you got Abe Lucas, and they're like, well, they played in an air raid offense. They're not going to be able to acclimate to this type of game. What do you say to those guys? Because I just look at athletic ability, and I say, all right, I can work with that.
Yeah, you know, the thing more than anything, Mike, is you know, yes, great to have off the mentality and athleticism and all that, but you have to have the will to want to run block. Run blocking is not fun and it's not easy. It's hard work. It's probably the one other than running the ball on, you know, second and third and short. It's probably the toughest thing to do on the football field because you gotta be willing to try to move, physically displace another dude that's 300 and some pounds and can bench press the world and squat the gym. And so you have to really be willing to do that. If you are willing to put your face in the fan, then they have a chance to be really good run blockers, you know. And the way the league is throwing the ball a lot, then I think you do have to put a premium on their ability to pass block. But I wouldn't count them out as run blockers simply because of the offense they came from. But I have to see them when they get on real pads, not just, you know, training camp shorts and T-shirts and stuff, and see if they have the willingness to go put their face in the fan, put their hand in the dirt, and go try to move another guy, you know, 6 inches to 2 or 3 yards. And if you can do that, you can be a great run blocker.
Hey, Ray, Bump had Ken Walker as his most impactful rookie this year, or the rookie with the potential to have the most impact. Do you agree? And if not, who's your vote?
Well, I mean, he was the guy that I remember we were doing the show, the draft show with Paul Moyer, and was sitting in that little room. And I said, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't draft this running back because he's their type of running back. Wow. And I think if he can stay healthy and the way they ran the split zone down the end of the season where you can, you know, hit, you know, the run back has a choice to hit it on the front side or cut it to the backside coming downhill. He's that type of runner. But I'm going to go with I think Cross is going to acclimate well to the league, but I think that if Lucas can come through as a solid run blocker and pass blocker, I think he could be a difference maker with how well the offense runs. So I'm going to go with Gabe Lucas.
So you got Geno and Drew Lock in camp right now. We'll see what they do if they bring other quarterbacks in. But with Drew Lock, he's a younger quarterback. He's learning a new system. He's here in Seattle. There's a lot of change going on for him. So I look at that offensive line and I say, okay, how can they help this young man? And I look at that center spot, right? When you want to change your protection and do all these things, can Drew Lock and should Drew Lock be able to count on that center to help him out so he can just focus on going through his progressions and getting the ball out on time?
I certainly hope so. Blythe has played a lot in this offense. And then I can remember, I think it was last year, probably middle of the season. I forgot the quarterback, the coach's name for the Rams. But he was saying that what they try to do is make their offense as simple as possible for the offensive line. And if they have that same concept here, then I think the offensive line have no problem adjusting to what they're trying to get done. But and then the quarterback can kind of do his thing. But it's always good to have a really smart center who knows the offense that can make some of the calls. I remember, I think it was Rick Myers' first year here with the Seahawks. He had a really good rookie year, but our center was making all the calls for, like, the blitz pickup and checking to where what side we're going to run the ball to and all that kind of stuff. And it really helped him just focus on what the routes were, you know, what the secondary was doing, and the center just handled everything up front. And so if you have a center that can do that, it will go a long way in helping both those quarterbacks be able to do what they can do best.
Now, we might have already been talking about this guy, but Ray, if you start thinking about a player who we're just not talking about enough when it comes to the success of the Seahawks in 2022, who comes to mind?
Well, I'm still going to go with my dude. I haven't been around much. I don't know how much you guys have talked about this guy, but I'm still going with my guy, Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor is going to be a beast in this league. I don't know how much you guys have talked about him. Last year, I thought he would get double-digit sacks. The little injury that he got kind of slowed him down a little bit. He was on his way to it. But I think we only saw, like, just the tip of the iceberg of what this dude is capable of. He can truly be a person that disrupts an offense and that an offense has to game plan around. I think last year people were just kind of wondering what he can do and how they were going to play him and what he's going to be able to bring to the table. But this year, with that experience under his belt and then also this new, defensive coordinator that their defense that they're running and stuff, I think that he's going to have an opportunity to be an explosive defender for the Seahawks.
Ray, I was a quarterback back in the day in high school, and I used to spoil my big men. Every Saturday, I used to bring them breakfast burritos to our meetings. Have you ever gotten a gift from a rookie or veteran quarterback that's like, look, boys, I need you. I appreciate you. Here's a gift.
Well, when I played, Rick Meyer was an awesome locker room dude. He may not have worked out to be the quarterback people thought, but he would, like, every Thursday, he had a house over at in Bear Creek. At the golf club there, and he would have the offensive line over for dinner every Thursday. And then when I was in Detroit, every Friday, Scott Mitchell would overnight fresh crab legs from Florida, and they'd be in the visitor locker room just for the offensive line. So that type of stuff was good. Sometimes it made you weigh heavy on Friday, and you had to pay that fine. But it was still good to munch out like that.
Hang on, every away game, he would get crab legs sent to the offensive lineman in the visiting locker room?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, the dude was coming off like a, he got like, back then it was like a $40 million contract or something, so he could afford it.
He could afford it. Still, though, it's the consistency. I mean, I've heard you talk before, and I know that, like, this is something we all agree with, but offensive linemen really are underappreciated,
I think,
by the average fan. So it has to feel good. You know that your quarterback should be appreciating you, and it's like bad etiquette to not do so, but it is still good to hear when it happens.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. It's better to have appreciation like for what offensive linemen do than to not. I think, if you start challenging like their manhood or their toughness or their commitment to doing their job, then I think that's where you kind of start to mess up. We're a group of dudes that, there may be a few of us that are trying to, like, be in the limelight and stuff like that. But for the most part, man, we just bring our lunch pail to work. Yeah. Our job is the only job in all of sports where your one job to do is to protect the somebody else. And so we take that seriously. And so we take our craft and what we do seriously. It doesn't always look pretty, may not always come out the way fans want it to, but it's not because we're not working as hard as we can and trying as hard as we can.
Linemen definitely are protectors. I remember being around our offensive linemen. We used to go out in Pullman. Nobody could touch me, Ray. I got my big boys around me. They made sure nobody could touch me. But speaking of protection, last year Russell Wilson was sacked 33 times. Now, there's some guys who were sacked more than him. Joe Burrow, 51. Ryan Tannehill, 47. Zach Wilson, 44. Is there a number that you're looking at as far as protection? Like how many times Drew Lock or whoever's quarterback needs to avoid to say, okay, this was a successful year as far as protecting the QB?
Man, that's always a tough one, man, because it depends on, like, who is saying who's responsible for the sack. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So a quarterback can scramble, can hold the ball, you know, get sacked. A lineman can get beat for a sack. A lineman can block for 4 seconds and give up a sack. So who's responsible for the sack? So I don't really put a whole lot of weight into, like, the number of sacks and who gave up sacks and this, that, and the other thing. There's so much that goes into, you know, determining who's responsible for a sack. I just think they need to be efficient at both protecting the quarterback and running the ball. And I think that'll help. The quarterback can help, you know, like we broke down that film last year, Bump, where if you're throwing, you know, using the running backs and using the tight ends, you're throwing your short, intermediate, and deep routes. You're not just stuck on one type of route and, you know, trying to push the ball down the field, but you're utilizing the whole field. Then I think that that helps protection. So if I can have 3 or 4 different sets the way I'm setting on the defensive lineman, that's going to help me. So I can short set. I can show it at like a 45-degree angle. I can vertical set. I can run block and then pass set. When I'm able to do that, that makes me a better pass blocker. And so then that should then make our pass protection better. And if we do something other than that, then they're not doing the offensive line any justice.
Now, Ray, fans are going to be able to hear both you and Bump on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, and I encourage you guys to listen. I always listen on my drive home from the stadium, and I always learn a ton. It's really fun. But there are some things where if you're not a player, it feels like it's above your head. What are some one or two measurables where if someone's watching along with you during the season to see how does Shane Waldron progress? How has he grown? What is growth? What are one or two things where fans can kind of track along with you?
Well, I think one of the staples of this offense, and, you know, I was trying to think of a different word to use, but I'm going to have to go back to it. But this idea around marrying the run game and the passing game. And so one of the staples in this offense is that I can remember when Richie Sherman was here and he said, man, one of the tough things against the Rams is that their first 2 or 3 steps on just about, you know, on a lot of their plays look all the same. And so you don't know if they're running the ball or throwing the ball. And so you end up, you know, guys come open underneath, come open deep, or you start pass dropping back in coverage and they're running the ball. So I think if you can start to see that, where you start to see this kind of continuity between what looks like a run and what looks like a pass, I think then you know that that's when he's in the groove. That's when this offense, I think, is really fully functioning. And then I do believe, like Pete Carroll said, is that, you know, moving, throwing the ball around. You have home run hitters at every skill position. At running back, you got Fant at the tight end spot. Then obviously you got DK and Tyler at the receiver spot and D. Eskridge. And so you have home run hitters all over the place. So if they're spreading the ball around and things are looking like it's all connected, like it's not like one track for the running game and one track for the passing game, it's just all one comprehensive offense. I think that's where you kind of know that those things are working.
All right, like I said, you can hear Big Ray along with Michael Bumpus on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, but you don't have to wait for the start of the season. Ray, I hope we can get you back on when we get closer to training camp and we start getting some players back in here to talk about.
Well, I'm always down for my peeps. And before I get off, you know, we're talking about the Mariners and this guy that just hit 8 was responsible for 8 runs for the Angels and they lost. I will say if I had 8 blocks that created 8 touchdowns, I'm getting a pay raise as soon as I get in the locker room. And I'm not giving it back until I gave up 8 sacks in one game.
That's
like,
right.
I'm just, like, you have to pay me if I'm giving up. If I get 8 blocks that leads to 8 touchdowns and we lose, like, somebody got to come out the pocket.
I need some kind of reward for that. I agree with you, Ray. I agree. He is Big Ray Roberts. Ray, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Ray.
You guys have a good one.
See ya. All right, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bob and Stacy.
Somebody get Big Ray's money. Headline number one.
He's
watch.
Not wrong, though. If I'm Shohei, I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Until I give up 8 runs in a game.
Yeah.
I did my part.
I did everyone's part.
Headline number one, the Washington Post reports in back in 2009, Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder reached a settlement of $1.6 million with a woman who accused him of sexual assault and harassment. What's the real headline?
Dan Snyder isn't the only one making it clear how he feels about women. Now, this isn't Dan Snyder coming out throwing around like sexist insults. What this is a clear pattern of inaction when it comes to a toxic workplace culture that disproportionately affects women with the Washington Commanders. Now, they can claim that the workplace culture is different, but there were clearly no real consequences for the person that bared the most responsibility. He's still there, and not only that, he's doing his very best to impede an investigation into the workplace organization. Now, I say that he's not the only one making it clear, because Roger Goodell was asked at this hearing today by one of the representatives, hey, do you have the authority to remove Dan Snyder? He said, no, I don't have the authority to do anything about Dan Snyder, which is why one of your takeaways today is that there's no further punishment for Dan Snyder. You know what inaction says? It's the same thing as saying, I agree.
Exactly.
I condone it. And right now, that is what all the other owners and the rest of the league are doing with Dan Snyder.
Didn't they just have like an owners meeting or coaches meeting where everyone comes together?
Yeah.
So they're all sitting down in this room. It's probably at a beautiful ballroom at the most expensive hotel that you can think of. Having the greatest meal you can think of. Sipping the finest of wine. And nobody calls them out.
Nope.
Suckers.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Shohei Ohtani became the first player in baseball history to drive in at least 8 runs in a game where his team never held the lead. The Angels lost to the Royals 12-11 in extra innings last night. What's the real headline?
The Mariners can't waste Julio. That's all I think of every time I see the Angels with Mike Trout. Every time I see Shohei Ohtani, you just think, you have a generational talent. You have an astronomical level of talent with these two, and you can't make the most of it. Don't do that with Julio here in Seattle.
Please don't do it. Don't do it with Shohei, man. He deserves better than this. You know what it kind of reminds me of? I don't know. It just popped in my head. I'm like, if Zion doesn't pan out, if Zion comes back healthy and good to go, he's stuck in New Orleans with the Pelicans that do nothing. That's what Shohei is right now. I feel bad for the dude, but you just keep balling and one day you can leave, maybe. I don't know. Good luck.
What are some other examples to you guys of guys whose talent was wasted with teams who didn't build around them? I'm immediately thinking of Dame. Maybe not taking
Damian Lillard.
Yeah. Not to maybe the highest. There has to be a worse example.
Boy.
I mean, you've had great talent in Detroit with the Lions.
Yeah, Barry.
Calvin Johnson. I would say not winning with Matthew Stafford, who was your number one overall pick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great tweet from May of 2021 by a guy named Matt Tomic. You can follow him on Twitter at M-A-T-T-T-O-M-I-C. And it says this. It says, every time I see an Angels highlight, it's like Mike Trout hit 3 home runs and raises average to .528. Well, Shohei Ohtani did something that hasn't been done since Tungsten Arm O'Doyle of the 1921 Akron groomsman as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3. That's how
exactly
it always feels like.
That's exactly what it is. It's like you can't have that. You have two of the best players. You have the two best players.
That's the
baseball.
Thing is it's not one generational talent. It's two.
Two of them. Two of the best players in baseball. I mean, Juan Soto, who hasn't been like meeting all expectations, I throw him in as one of the best players. But right now, these two are the best.
Side note, Trout was like 0-26 at one point. I looked at his average and go, he's got to be like batting .230 right now. No, he was still running like .280-something.
Yeah.
0-26. That's how good that dude is.
A lot of texts coming in.
I was going to say, I was going to have Bump guess it. I was going to say, without looking at the text line, who would you guess? Mariners fans would say Felix.
Yeah.
There's that one picture that goes around. Nathan Bishop tweets it out a lot of Felix looking somber and just upset, staring out over the field after a loss with a background that says,
thank
you for coming. And it's that kind of thing of like, thanks so much for making it out to the park. Also, we have a Cy Young winner that we didn't make the most of.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the NFL on Tuesday asked a federal court to send Brian Flores' lawsuit to arbitration in hopes that the proceedings will take place behind closed doors. What's the real headline?
An unexpected move by a league that never pushes back on problematic owners. That's exactly what this is. In this same batch of headlines where we have nothing being done about Dan Snyder, who has decades, and take out the sexual harassment. Don't forget that this organization was also cheating season ticket holders out of refunds. Like upwards of like, what, $5 million that they made over 10 years? Like, let's pretend hypothetically that you're just a bad person that doesn't care about people being sexually harassed. Do you care about getting your money back? Because Washington doesn't care if you get your money back. I mean, they were cheating people left and right, and he's not going anywhere. He is entrenched in that club, that boys' club. Well, now this same league is being accused of prejudicial hiring practices and making a mockery of any effort to diversify coaching staffs. And they're like, let's go ahead and let's have as much of this behind the scenes as possible.
Thank goodness for Mike Tomlin taking a chance on Brian Flores, because these owners would have kept him out this league for him doing the right thing. And you're trying to have meetings behind closed doors. You know what that means? That means you were wrong. That's like when I disciplined my son and I was wrong. I'm like, oh, dang, I messed that up. Hey, babe, let's talk in the room about this, because I don't want him to know I might not have handled this correctly. It's just shadiness all the way around. And it all starts with the owners. I don't know how many times we can say this. Leadership, leadership, leadership. It is bad in the NFL.
I'm going to end headlines here rather than another headline with a very quick 2-minute conversation here. We're going to bring on ESPN Browns reporter Jake Trotter here in just a couple minutes to figure out the latest with Baker Mayfield. I feel like the population of people rooting for Baker to be a Seahawk has now transferred to Jimmy G to be a Seahawk. If you're still one of the people that's like, no, I would love for Baker Mayfield to be here, please text in 206-421-3776. I got to hear from you guys. Bump, how do you see this right now with those two?
How do I see it? I think more people want Baker in our area, in Seattle, because they look at Jimmy and all they see is that red 49er gold, red and gold, and they just cannot get over it. I just encourage you guys to look at the stats. I know Jimmy's been banged up a couple times, so has Baker. But Jimmy wins some ball games. I think you're good either way, though. But if I had to pick, I'm still riding with Jimmy G.
Does it tell you anything if the team sticks with Drew Lock or Geno?
It means that they believe. They believe, and I really think that they are okay with Drew Lock and Geno.
I agree.
Competing.
I think they're higher on them than people think. Mm-hmm. Certainly the national media, but. If either of these two guys are released, I'd hope to at least see Seattle involved in some of those conversations. I mean, always compete, and these two guys have better track records.
Give us a headline or something.
Selfishly, I mean, nothing to do with me talking about Baker Mayfield in Seattle. Speaking of, ESPN Browns reporter Jake Trotter joins us next. What are the odds of that?
At Southern Company, we know the right solutions start with the right questions. How do we deliver reliable energy and overcome unpredictable challenges? How do we get to net zero carbon emissions and ensure communities thrive? How do we deliver affordable energy today and tomorrow? Southern Company, building the future of energy.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
All right. Will we see Baker Mayfield in Seattle? I know that the topic's cooled a little bit, but Baker Mayfield remains presumably unhappy in Cleveland. Let's ask ESPN Browns reporter Jake Trotter joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jake, how's it going?
Hey, Stacy, how are you?
I'm well. Me and my co-host Michael Bumpus, still very curious about what's going to happen with the quarterback situation here in Seattle. And I will tell you that locally, conversations about Baker have not stopped. What's the latest with him there in Cleveland? Is the expectation still that he'll be traded?
Yeah, really the latest is that there is no latest. We are in a status quo. Really the only conversations that have happened that have gotten serious in terms of a trade were during the second day of the draft when Cleveland and Carolina were talking, but even then, the two sides never got particularly close to a deal. Like, if you're going to use a football analogy, I don't think they crossed the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. Carolina wanted the Browns to pay more of Baker's salary. The Browns have been reluctant to pay more than half or so far. And so we were at an impasse with no end in sight. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because in a month, if Baker's still on the roster, unlike with minicamp where they could excuse him, they can't do that with training camp. So he's going to be in the building here if we get to that point. So nothing really new to report.
Jake, that whole situation just sounds and feels awkward. And I imagine Deshaun Watson, with all the stuff that he has going on, right? Does it feel awkward? Does it seem hard for him to be normal knowing that he has all these allegations just circling around him and and just showing up every day with that type of pressure and spotlight on them?
Yeah, everything in Cleveland seems awkward right now. To Baker, starting with Baker, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, I don't know if they're going to put him in like a certain part of the building and kind of keep him away from everybody. I think actually the best probably analogy or anecdote of what's happened, what will happen with Baker is Deshaun Watson in Houston last year, where he was kind of part of the team, but not really. Mm-hmm. I could see the Browns doing that and, you know, waiting for a quarterback injury elsewhere to potentially facilitate a trade, which, by the way, could take us all the way to the trade deadline. Like, I heard that chatter here, that could be an option for the Browns. And then with Watson, I mean, right now it's just waiting to see if he's going to be suspended, which feels like a decision is coming here pretty soon. You know, maybe the next couple of weeks or so, we'll see what happens. The interesting scenario, I hadn't really thought about this until you maybe consider it, but like we could be in a situation where Deshaun Watson is not in Cleveland, like he's suspended, and Baker Mayfield is, and neither one of them are playing. Like, in fact, it might be the most likely scenario at this point.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I think, you know, Jake, most of what Bump and I see on the text line is people saying, well, I don't think Baker's coming here because what if Deshaun's suspended, he'll be playing. But it sounds to me, based on what you're saying, like that relationship between team and player is so irreparable that it's not a possibility. Like he is not suiting up for the Browns again.
Yeah, I would say it's not a possibility. I would probably put it at 0.1% chance.
Fair.
I mean, the bridge is burned. Neither side wants it to happen. Baker don't want to play for the Browns ever again. And the Browns don't want Baker to play for them ever again. So it's just, there's been no contact really between the two sides, best I can tell, really since March. So, I mean, a lot would have to happen for it to get to a point where Baker would come back and the Browns would even want him back. But again, I say 0.1 instead of zero, because we could get to a point where, you know, the Browns are 0-3 with Jacoby Brissett, Deshaun Watson suspended for like the season, and Baker Mayfield's just sitting in the building. Like you would wonder if at some point, like, you know, if you're the Browns, don't you have to have like a meeting or something to can we do something to get Baker back on the field? You know, I think the Browns actually would consider trading for another quarterback at that point if it got so bad for them. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing how things have gone so south for Baker and the Browns from just like 16, 17 months ago.
Jake, we know that the Browns have a loyal fan base. What is the temperature with the fan base, knowing that Deshaun Watson possibly will not play this year? Baker Mayfield is gone. Are they optimistic? Are they patient? Are they frustrated? And what's the feeling over there in Cleveland?
Yeah, I don't think optimistic or patient would be the adjectives I would use. I think that, you know, Baker had a lot of fans in this fan base. I mean, you know, the Browns had been just in the cellar forever until Baker arrived. And, you know, he was the first quarterback to win a playoff game for Cleveland in 26 years. You know, he really struggled last year. A lot of people jumped off that bandwagon that, you know, we're happy to see him go. But there are a lot of Browns fans that were kind of upset with the way that things ended with Baker. And then on top of that, I think there's a swath of the fan base that, like, they don't care about the allegations against Deshaun Watson. They want to see him play, and they know how talented he is. But there's also a significant portion of the fan base that's just not on board with what the Browns have done, you know, to varying degrees. Either conflicted about it, like, you know, how do we root for this guy? You know, we love the Browns, but we don't want to root for this guy, or to just like outright just disgust with the whole situation and the allegations that have been made. So it's a fan base that's had kind of a rough off season, and that's coming off a bunch of disappointing seasons, you know, going back to the 80s. So it's been a tough few months for the Browns. Mm-hmm. Fan base for sure, and I don't think that anybody feels great about what's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't blame them, and that's it's a tough situation to cover. So credit you for the nuance of that.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, back to Baker really quick. We got you for just a couple more minutes here. Out of curiosity, what kind of guy was he in the locker room? Did his teammates like him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. Let's start with this. You know, Baker, you know, right after the win over the Steelers in 2020, he was one of the most popular guys in the locker room again. And that had kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit through his first couple of seasons. And just, you know, a lot of guys in that locker room looked up to Odell Beckham, you know, for going back to last season. And when that divorce happened, I think it really, somebody put it to me this way, you really poisoned the well for Baker with a lot of guys. And I think by the end of the year, you had a pretty fractured team, you know, between guys that were just like, we're done with this guy, to, you know, some guys that were still friends, pretty friendly with Baker still, but like, you know, had to acknowledge the way he was playing. I mean, I think that, you know, if he had played well last year, everything would have been fine. But when you don't, when you struggle on the field, it, you know, creates other issues potentially. And I'm not, Baker definitely has been his own worst enemy at times. But at the same time, the way that Odell Beckham forced his way out really put Baker in a tough spot, a spot that he wasn't so much able to overcome in the locker room because he was hurt and he wasn't playing well, and things just kind of spiraled from there. So I can tell you, like, at Oklahoma, you'll never find a teammate that was more beloved, like, you know, in the recent history of that program than Baker Mayfield. And for whatever reason in Cleveland, it just did not translate, you know, over the course of his 4 years there, and really began to kind of fall apart toward the end.
All right, Jake, well, let's end on a positive note, huh? I'm sure you've had enough going over there in Cleveland.
Jake, I don't envy you.
It's a positive note. I'm curious to see what this would even be at this point.
You know, I'm looking at your draft. You had about 9 draft picks over there in Cleveland. Which one of these guys has impressed the most this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other part of the Watson trade. You know, the Browns gave up 3 first-round picks. So, you know, their window is right now to contend, because they're not going to have an influx of high-end talent coming in anytime soon. You know, so their first pick they made this year was actually in the 3rd round. And I like the receiver they drafted out of Purdue, David Bell, with the 99th pick. Extremely productive receiver in college, led the FBS in receptions over the last 3 years. You know, he's going to basically take over for where Jarvis Landry left off in the slot, operating underneath the coverage. And I think he's going to have a big year. But they're going to need some of these guys, even though they're 4th, 5th, 6th round picks, to come in and help. And I think the other guy, you know, to watch is Kate York, the kicker out of LSU. They took in the 4th round. They handed him the job the moment he, you know, arrived in Berea. And, you know, they're looking for somebody to take over for Phil Dawson. You know, they're the great kicker they had a few years ago. It's been a total adventure off the banks of Lake Erie when it comes to field goal kicking for the Browns in recent years.
He is Jake Trotter, covering the Cleveland Browns for ESPN, including maybe the messiest, most controversial, complicated quarterback situation happening right now. And for that reason, Jake, we'll be covering your watching your coverage closely on this one. It's we don't envy you, but you've been doing a phenomenal job. And we appreciate you taking the time, man. We really do.
I appreciate that, guys. Take care.
Jake. Yeah, you too. Bye. This hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Well, we went to Cleveland. We started in Seattle. We're going to take a look around the rest of the league next.
You can rely on Atlas Butler for all of your plumbing and drain service needs. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. One call truly does it all. Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
This hour, Bump and Stacy's brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I'm joined here by Seahawks legend, Michael
Bumpus.
Oh, my
gosh. Here's the story behind that. The Seahawks call me a legend. 5 catches, Seahawks. 45 yards, 1 touchdown.
Yeah, that one touchdown.
You know how much more that's 5 more catches and 1 touchdown more than me or any of my friends ever had.
Well, you know what? I thank you guys, but nah. Not a legend. Appreciate it.
Gotta embrace it. Embrace it, Bump. It is your show, so you're allowed to embrace it. You're allowed to introduce yourself that way. This hour, Bump and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL. I am going to start with, obviously, some devastating news. This one in Baltimore. So we're starting in Baltimore. Ravens linebacker Jalen Ferguson was found dead this morning at just 26 years old. Authorities found him unresponsive in North Baltimore in his home late last night. No other details have been released, though authorities don't suspect foul play. The Ravens, though, have issued a statement. They said, "We're profoundly saddened by the tragic passing of Jalen Ferguson. He was a kind, respectful young man with a big smile and infectious personality." They expressed their condolences to his family and friends. And that's the latest. Again, this news breaking early this morning after he was found late last night. So very, very recent.
So sad, man. Just thoughts out to his family. I believe he had a couple kids, maybe a wife or a significant other. Just feel real horrible, man. I hope... just nothing you can really say when a life is lost like that.
It is really jarring, though, anytime an athlete, anytime any celebrity, anyone that you just see regularly, there's this feeling of permanence that you have with them. Yeah. When if that person dies, obviously always tragically, it's very jarring. Like we talked about Kobe as being the most shocking death. That I think of like almost any celebrity.
Yeah.
Certainly any athlete that I could remember. But there are other moments like, Skaggs, when the news of him tragically passing, wasn't that just like he had just started in the series that he had played against the Mariners or was projected to be in there? Like, I remembered writing up the lineup.
Yeah, it was a couple days out.
Yeah, I think at the time I was still in digital and I remember writing something where he was in there and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God. I mean, that's a horrible example, but what I mean is it's always very jarring and sad, and then you think of their families and yeah, it's just. There's nothing to add. It's tragic. There's truly no silver lining outside of just sending prayers to his family and to his friends. Going to L.A. for the next one here. Jalen Ramsey underwent minor shoulder surgery on Tuesday. The Rams called it precautionary. He issued a selfie, so he looks to be in good spirits. He should be ready to go by training camp, though. So any Seahawks fans hoping he'd be delayed? I hate to break it to you. He'll be fine.
Nah, he'll be good. And you know what? That mouth is still going to be running. He's still going to be aggressive. It's always tough when guys have surgery, even if they are for a rival team. I hope he pulls through that thing and is ready to go. But, yeah, Jalen's going to be – he'll be all right. He'll be good.
We talked about – do you think the Seahawks have a chance, any of their corners, to have anyone be elite? Or does the group right now look like, you know, they can be serviceable? They can be serviceable starters.
I really think Kobe Bryant's going to be elite. I really believe that in my heart. And if Trey Brown were healthy, I think they'd be battling it out right now. I'm feeling them.
All right, next up, going to Boston for this one. The Patriots are bringing back their red throwback unis as an alternate uniform in 2022. I think these look really cool. And all it made me think of was, when can we see the Seahawks throwback unis?
I love the throwback unis because now they're throwbacks, but they have like a modern feel to it, right? Like the jerseys are tighter. The colors pop differently. I don't know. I think we just appreciate it more now in our later years. But I'm all for it, man. Seahawks, please get it done because they'd have the best jerseys in the NFL, I feel.
1,000%. The silver helmets. Throwbacks. Yeah. Curtis, remind me what the rule was on that. They can't do it until next year.
Yeah, because I think it's supply chain stuff. But
supply chain ruining everything.
But the old rule was you could only have one helmet shell color, and the Seahawks current helmets are blue, which obviously doesn't match what they wore in their early years, which was the silver helmets. So now you can wear multiple. We've seen, obviously, the Patriots are wearing throwback uniforms with the white helmets. The Falcons, I believe, are bringing back red helmets. Mm-hmm. I think a couple other... The Saints have a black helmet now, so we're seeing a couple other teams out there take advantage of it. And I mean, it's the best thing, seeing these throwback uniforms, not just from potentially the Seahawks in the future, but I think the Buccaneers are another team that are going to be wearing their creamsicle uniforms. Yeah. I love it.
I think the Seahawks have, if not number one, and I'm not saying this to be biased, like a top three throwback uni look.
Easily.
If you do, I mean, this is like, I feel like it's also very in. Like, I could see every other Urban Outfitters being like, hey, can we get those Seahawks throwback uni looks? It's just a cool look.
Unpopular take. I kind of like the creamsicle Tampa Bay.
Not an unpopular take at all.
No?
I really, really like
it. I like it, too.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool.
The only
all
throwback, right. Now this is way, way, way throwback. Is the Steelers when they do their little bumblebee striped ones. Yeah, that's the only one where I'm like,
ugly. Don't they wear like tan pants with them too?
Or are we talking like pre-World War II here? What are we doing? This is awful. Next story here, going to the Steelers, going to Pittsburgh, where head coach Mike Tomlin was part of a Sports Illustrated podcast. He was asked whether the team would be interested in bringing back free agent wide receiver Antonio Brown. He kept his answer short and simple and, in my opinion, hilarious. Quote, y'all know that ain't happening.
Tomlin's so real, so 100. He goes, y'all know that ain't happening. But then what he does do is he highlights is how hard Antonio worked, how great of a football player he was. So Tomlin, a class act, but kept it 100 at the same time. I appreciate that dude.
I know we just talked about this, but Antonio Brown's stats from 2013 to 17 or so.
Ridiculous.
You forget how good he was because of how drastic that fall off was, like the fall from grace, ripping off your uniform while you're running off the field and quitting on your team in the middle of a game. That's part of your lasting legacy, in addition to all the other lawsuits you were involved in, which is a bummer because you were one of the most elite wide receivers.
Now it's going to take him a few rounds to get into the Hall of Fame, just for that.
You think he still will?
Yeah, I think he has to. Those numbers are ridiculous.
I mean, we're talking like over 1,200 yards every single season, over 1,500 in three of them, almost 2,000 in another.
100 catches every year. I mean,
he was so dominant.
Who does that?
It's no one. Elite wide receivers. That's who does it.
Divas.
Diva wide receivers. Diva wide receivers do that. Do you think that, by the way, getting back to that conversation we were having about DK Metcalf, have you revisited your answer once the text line said 27 would be about it? Would you surpass 27?
I would not. I would. I would.
You had to think about it for a second. The possibility of losing DK.
He's just so good, man. Do what you got to do.
He's phenomenal. I know that there are some people. What would you say to people who say, yeah, he drops the ball? He's not elite. He drops the ball.
Receivers drop the ball. Like, they don't catch everything
bad
thrown to them.
Bad receivers, Bump. I'm just kidding.
Not the receivers that attend your camp.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not. In fact, one of the focuses of
thank
our...
Thank you for that reminder.
Thank you. We actually have never had a drop in one of our camps yet.
Yeah.
Mostly we haven't started throwing drills. That's part of it.
But we're doing lots of blocking drills.
We actually try to make sure our wide receivers are the best blocking receivers because that gets the contracts.
Yes.
So that's really what we
focus on. Well, and also we threaten them. They have to pay us if they drop a pass.
Okay.
Well, they have to pay us regardless. But even on top of that, it's coming out of their pockets.
We have a fee.
No T-shirt for them if they drop a pass.
No, absolutely not. We do
$20. No water for them if
no
they drop
water.
A pass.
No snacks, no food. Yeah. They have to sleep outside. I mean, we just try to really kind of scare it out of them.
Tough love.
Yeah.
But then you give them a hug at the
end
of the
day. Now, we do have a couple lawsuits. They're minor. We're not too worried about them, but...
We got Dan Snyder's lawyers. They seem to keep him employed.
We'll be totally fine with it. I was going to get to some of my favorite Gronk moments, but we'll see if we can get back to that maybe in four down territory coming up at 1:15. First, though, before we get to any of that, if at first you don't succeed at spending, please try again. That's the message I would like to send to the Seahawks and Mariners. That's next.
At Southern Company, we know the right solutions start with the right questions. How do we deliver reliable energy and overcome unpredictable challenges? How do we get to net zero carbon emissions and ensure communities thrive? How do we deliver affordable energy today and tomorrow? Southern Company, building the future of energy.